Christ, everybody. Good evening. It's wonderful to be back. We're going to open up our Chumash to page 180. We're going to speak tonight about fascinating secret that is written clearly in the Torah. It's one of these things that the scientific world doesn't yet acknowledge. But who knows that we will shortly see them with all their advances catching up to a most powerful, important physical phenomenon related to genetic engineering that the Torah speaks about. It's very interesting that the Jewish commentators that speak about the subject begin thanking God for making us Jews and for giving us the privilege of having these secret informations. A lot of which what I'm going to share tonight is something that when people get married, chasam kalas, learn about regarding to the power that we have to physically affect our children, genetically affect our children. People think that genes are inherited, and obviously you inherit genes, but we're going to learn tonight that genes could be inspired. It's a crazy concept. That we have the power to inspire a genetic modification on our children. Genetically, physically, genetically, emotionally, genetically, mentally, and certainly genetically, spiritually. Independent of the gene pool that we share. It's an unbelievable piece of the Chumash. You don't even have to read the commentators to see that the Torah is addressing genetic engineering. There was approximately, I think around 100 years ago, there was this guy called Mendel. I don't know his first name. He became very famous recently for discovering the math behind genetic engineering, the inherited part of genetic engineering. And he, based on what he discovered, people today, if they discovered that one of the parents have a certain illness, and you want to either minimize or even rule out the chances for a certain genetic illness to go to the next generation, today they have that science based a lot on what Mendel discovered. What science does not yet acknowledge is verses psukim that we read in this week's parsha. The Torah never denies the reality that there is genes that are inherited from parents. Absolutely. But what we know, a sign of that, is that we physically, this is not a miracle, that there is a power that we have to modify the genes that we're going to pass on to our children. So just to give a short introduction. Last week we spoke about Yitzhak. We spoke about the difference between Yitzhak and Abraham. When people are younger, they mistakenly think that Abraham is like the chesed, he's kind, he's like the nice guy, and Yitzhak is, you know, severe, he's gavura. Most people identify themselves with Abraham. And the truth is that Yitzhak is a level ahead of Abraham, which is why he came after him. It wasn't the evolution, it was a upward evolution. You needed first to have Abraham, as we explained last week, in order to get to the greater level of Yitzhak. And this week we're going to learn about the greatest, which is Yaakov. So first,
I'm
just...
I'm so sorry,
thank you. Page 180, or for the web audience, we're in chapter 28, verse 10. Just a short introduction. Vayetze Yaakov mebe'er sheva. The parsha begins that Yaakov left the city of Be'er Sheva, and he went to the city of Haran. Okay, the classical question is, we already knew that Yaakov was living in Be'er Sheva. We knew that because the Torah wrote that his parents were living in Be'er Sheva last week. And if the purpose of this opening of the parasha would have been to tell us where he's going to, now that we already know where he was, all the Torah needs to tell you is that Yaakov went to Haran. Correct? If it was established that you are in LA, and you're telling someone that you're going to New York, or you're going to Eretz Yisrael, that's what you tell them. I went to Israel. You don't tell them, I left LA and I went to Israel. The guy talks like this, you know, something's weird about it. Mm-hmm. So why does the Torah... So what's the significance of the Torah writing where he left when it, we know that? So everyone speaks about it. Just one medrash. The medrash writes the following. That one of the reasons why the city is called Be'er Sheva, who knows why it's called Be'er Sheva? Well, Be'er means a natural body of water. Well, what does Sheva mean? So Sheva means seven. And what else can the word Sheva mean? An oath. Shavua. What was the oath? The Torah recorded last week and 2 weeks ago about an oath, a peace treaty that Abraham made with Abimelech. Yitzchak made a peace treaty with Abimelech. That peace treaty is called an oath. They made a covenant. And the Medrash writes that the reason why Yaakov left, obviously, Torah is multi-layered. He left because his mother told him that your brother wants to kill him. The Torah wrote it. The Medrash writes that the reason why Yaakov left because he didn't want to make a peace treaty with Abimelech. Why? Because he knew that if he would make a peace treaty with Abimelech, he would delay the Jewish peoples entering Israel seven generations. When Abraham made a peace treaty with Abimelech, the consequence of that peace treaty, even though today the word peace treaty is a nice word, the consequence was that it took seven generations from Abraham Avinu, because of that peace treaty, took us seven generations to be able to go into Israel.
Is that what it means by seven and the flow of water?
Well, who's seven? Seven is Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, good. That Moshe was the seventh generation from Abraham. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first person who began to conquer Israel. God did not give him the opportunity to go into Israel, but he conquered what the Torah calls the Eiver HaYarden, right, the Transjordan, where 2.5 of the Jewish tribes settled when he made the war with Oiv and Sichai. When Yitzchak made a peace treaty with Abimelech, the Medrash says, he delayed it another generation. No, it would take seven generations for the Jews to conquer Israel. His father made it seven generations, from him six. When he made the peace treaty, he delayed it another. Now you have to count seven from him. Who was the seventh from Yitzchak? Yehoshua. Had Yaakov stayed in Be'er Sheva, he would have been somehow manipulated, he would have been cornered into making a peace treaty with Abimelech, and he knew that if he would have done that, it would have delayed our entry yet another generation. So he left. He left the place where you make the peace treaties. He left the peace tables, and he went away, and because of that, we entered Israel earlier. That's what the Medrash writes. It's amazing when you hear it today. It's like the Medrash is it's a Likud member talking, right? What's going on today? What's called today? What else? Let's talk Torah and the Palace. But that's what the Medrash writes. Now, everyone asks the question on the Medrash, how can the Medrash say such a thing? When Avraham Avinu did not know that? Did Avraham Avinu want to delay the entry of his descendants seven generations? But Yitzchak, he's a tzaddik, and these are our patriarchs. But Yitzchak did not know that. Only Yaakov figured it out. So the Rebbe spoke about this once, and he said something very deep. It's that introduction to the theme of tonight, which has to do with mamash, it's literally genetic engineering in a very powerful way. And the uniqueness of Yaakov. The difference between Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We can give a whole class just on this, just to be the nut of here, then it'll just unfold it later. Abraham and Yitzchak, like the rest of us, acknowledged they were very aware of this holy. There's holiness in the world, and there's unholiness in the world. There's holiness in us, and there is unholiness in us. How do you deal with the negativity that is in us? How do you do that? How do I do that? Step number one is you don't allow the unholiness to interfere with your holy heart. That's the first step. Many people wrongly say, since you know I don't keep kosher, then why should I transform? And if I do, I'm a hypocrite. Since I give in to my Yetzer Hara in my weak area, so what's the point of me doing the other things that come easy to me? And that question is coming from the Yetzer Hara. One has nothing to do with the other. We're not hypocrites. We are complicated people, right? To simplify things, we have two separate souls. We have a good side and we have the opposite side. And they're both fighting, there's a struggle. And sometimes one side wins and sometimes the other side wins. No one is applauding the negative side winning. But at least, let us limit that. Let us not allow the unholiness in us to conquer, to interfere with the holiness in us. So if I, for example, if I enjoy Shabbos, good. And if I have a weak area that I'm still struggling in, let me just isolate that. At least that should not interfere with the holy party. Does that make sense? Even a greater tzaddik, tzaddikim, will never allow their unholy side to express itself. They're going to tell the unholy part, you stay quiet, you go to sleep, don't bother me. And that was the meaning of the peace treaty that Abraham and Yitzchak did with Avimelech. Abraham and Yitzchak representing the Kedusha, the holiness. Avimelech is representing the unholiness. The peace treaty was, don't bother us. Let us be. That's the goal of peace, right? You stay there and let me be here. You go bother someone else. I'm a Yid, I'm a Jew. I got a mission, I got to keep the mitzvahs. Leave me alone. So in so much as they were tzaddikim, Avraham and Yitzchak, the peace that they made with the Yetzer Hara wasn't that, you know, 50-50 or 80-20. It was 100% the holy side will be the one that will be functioning. The unholy part will be totally dormant, not going to disturb anyone, but it's still there. And since it's still there, we were unable to conquer the land of Israel. The only way one is able to conquer the land of Israel is when you transform the unholy, when the unholy itself becomes holy. So as long as I have a Yetzer Hara, even though I'm very disciplined and I never allow my Yetzer Hara to get the better of me, but it's there, and even if it's dormant, I don't even know that I'm struggling with it, but it's there, I cannot conquer Israel. To conquer Israel, I have to transform, I gotta change, genetic engineering, I gotta modify the Yetzer Hara. How do you do that? We'll see in a moment, the theory. How do we do it in practice? We'll figure it out hopefully in 80, 90 years. I don't know how long it takes. The Dr. Devin says certain people are never able to do it. But this is a very important start point to understand that there are two ways of dealing with something which is unhealthy. One is to suppress it, and that has to be step number one. You can't start out transforming unholiness. You're going to lose. Suppress it. Right? That's what we do with our children. If they want to do something that's unhealthy, that's dangerous, we don't have to explain to them first why it's dangerous to cross the street. For they, I got to reach the point that my kid, my one-year-old, has to understand himself that, no, the first thing I need to do is don't cross the street. Whatever it is that he urges to do, don't do that if it's dangerous. That's step number one. That was the meaning of the peace treaty. They told Avimelech, don't bother us, and Avimelech complied, but Avimelech still existed. Yaakov Avinu was the first of the patriarchs. He was the third of the patriarchs, but he was the first. Based on the work, after he had the power, the koach of Avram, and he had the power and the advantage of Yitzhak, now came Yaakov, and Yaakov had the power to transform the evil and turn it into good. So it wasn't that the peace treaty that Avraham Avinu made with Avimelech caused or delayed. The peace treaty that Abraham Avinu made with Avimelech didn't delay anything. It was the fact is it was that he couldn't transform it. The best he could have done with him was make a peace deal. I'm not going to bother you. You don't bother me. Yaakov didn't make a peace treaty with Avimelech. You know what Yaakov did? Yaakov went into the lion's den. He didn't go to Avimelech to transform him. He went to a much unholier place and person than Avimelech. He went to Haran, to Laban. And he went there not to make a peace treaty with them, but he went there to transform it, as we'll see, to separate the good from the bad. He extracted the good from the bad. And that's how he elevated it. He married women from there. He married the daughters of Laban. He got the wealth from Laban. And then he brought it back to Israel. So he took the Haran and he brought it back into Israel. Okay, clear? I don't want to talk theory because we have to know how to make it real to our lives. But this is our life, basically. This concept. That we, when we're younger, the first step is we got to tell the unholy parts of us, we got to contain it. Don't bother me. Stay where you are and slowly suppress it until it's totally not expressing itself. But as long as the unholiness is still in us, we'll never make it to the Holy One. Yaakov Avinu's power was that he knew how to deal with unholiness. He didn't suppress it. He didn't ignore it. He had a conversation with it and he transformed it. Until, as we'll see soon, physically, he had the power of genetically modifying something physical. Something that was a lamb. We'll see there were animals that had one color, and he had the koach to change what they were. Even physically, that's how powerful Yaakov Avinu was, to transform one thing into something else. That also explains, before we get to the genetic part, that when it's in the same page over here, the Torah begins the famous story that he had a dream, and there was the ladder, and the angels were going up, and the angels were coming down. And the question is, you know, the classical question, where do angels originate from? The angels originate, you think they originate from the heavens, right? So if your home base is the heaven, and you're dreaming about angels, where should the first moment be? From the ground up or from up down?
For an angel?
Yeah, if the angel's home is the heaven, so then the first thing that they should have seen is the angels are coming down. Why did they dream that the angels are going up? So Rashi answers the question by explaining that Yaakov Avinu was leaving Israel. Every person has with them angels that protect them. Whatever that means, leave that for another time. However, the angels of Israel are of a great superior quality than the angels that are sent by God to accompany and to protect us out of Israel.
Oh, to say the level where they were when they changed.
So when Yaakov was leaving Israel, he saw the angels going up. The angels of Israel were not allowed to leave Israel. They need to stay in Israel. So they went back to heaven. To Israel in heaven. And then the angels that were meant to go with him to Chutz La'aretz, to out of Israel, they came down the ladder. That's what Rashi says. And then everyone asks that this parsha ends. Look inside, you can take my word. The end of the portion, after Yaakov finally transforms Laban, he took all the good out of Laban and he elevated it. The parsha, this week's portion, ends that when Yaakov Avinu was heading back to Israel, it says that Vayitku Boi Malachi Elikim, that groups of angels were with him. Groups. The group of out of Israel, and the angels from Israel, Rashi says, left Israel to go together. So the angels that were not allowed to leave Israel before he left Israel needed to go back to the heavens. Those angels came down and they left Israel to greet Yaakov before he entered Israel. How were they allowed to do that? Yeah, classical question. You got the question? Was if the Malachim, if the angels cannot leave Israel, then why is it that at the end of the parsha the angels left Israel to go and greet him? Rashi says, even before he came to Israel. Changing of the guard, leaving Israel, was in Israel. The angels stayed in Israel. They went up and new angels came down of an inferior quality.
Is it in heaven that something occurred?
So it must be that Yaakov Avinu transformed out of Israel the unholiness of the world to the extent that the entire world became like Israel.
Only surrounding Yaakov.
Only surrounding Yaakov, correct. At that time, when Mashiach will come, then then it's going to be everyone's reality. But that's the bottom line of the Nekudah. In other words, there's a theme. The parsha begins and ends with that Yaakov was different than Abraham and Yitzhak. And this is the point, that Yaakov didn't only know how to suppress evil, Yaakov Avinu knew how to transform. And he didn't transform it by suppressing it, which is the way genetic engineering works today, is that if a person, God forbid, has some genes that are unhealthy, that there's a science today that will teach you how to suppress that, how to isolate that should not go to the next generation. But that's not transforming. That's the avoidah of Abraham and Yitzhak, physically. Yaakov Avinu, that had the power to transform something unhealthy into something healthy, he was even able to do that on the physical level. Then let's go and speak about it. And we're going to read a couple of verses in the Torah. And we're going to just share a couple of the more classical commentators. And we're going to share what Chassidus says about it. And we're going to put everything together. And there's an amazing secret over here. So let's go. We're going to have to go a couple pages ahead. Let's go to page 198, an hour from Moshe. For the web audience, we're going to chapter 30. We're going to start reading verse 37, Lamed Zayin. It's an amazing story. Just a little bit of a background for those who don't know. Yaakov, he's already here for 7 years. He's working to marry Rachel. Then he's given Leah. And that's, by the way, the source of Sheva Barachot is from here. So Laban tells him that after 1 week, not after 7 years, after 1 week, I'll give you Rachel. But you have credit, but you have to work for her another 7 years. Get the story straight. People, I don't know why people think that he worked 7 years for Leah, then he worked another 7 years for Rachel. That's like not good. He worked 7 years for Rachel, and he was fooled, and he was given Leah. He was fooled. It was meant for him to marry Leah, but he married Leah. All Laban told him, wait for the week to end, wait for Sheva Brachas to end, finish the wedding celebration, and I'm going to give you Rachel after a week, but you have to work for her another 7 years. So Yaakov Avinu now paid his debt. He worked 14 years to marry two of the daughters of Laban, and Yaakov Avinu wants to go home. Comes along Laban, and Laban tells Yaakov that I nichashti. We learned about nichush. Nichush, we learned, is not idolatry, but nichush is some type of dark arts that the Torah puts together with the prohibitions of idolatry. It's not penalized with the death penalty, but they get flogged. And nichush, amongst other things, give people a certain way of intuiting the future, or knowing something which is hidden. And Yaakov and Laban, by the way, we can learn in Zohar Thursday night, there's an opinion that says that Laban is Bilam. For sure he was his father or his grandfather. There's no doubt about that. And Bilam was the greatest master of the dark arts that ever lived. Laban wasn't either, this was Laban, or Laban was the beginning of this. And Laban had a power in Nichush. And Laban tells Yaakov, you know, kind of insult, I looked into, you know, the crystal ball, and I see that all of my success is because of you, so please stay. Isn't that a nice way to tell someone? I love you, I need you. Everything that I have is because of you, so I need you, stay.
Giving part
of it. Huh?
Giving part of it.
So Yaakov tells him, well, if you already are admitting that all your success is because of me, then I have a family. Give me part of it. So they make a deal. They make the strangest of deals. What, so Laban tells Yaakov like this. The wealth of Laban consisted primarily from being a cattle owner. For city people, we don't appreciate that. But that's we appreciate owning real estate. But owning cattle is not bad. It was a good, it was a sign of wealth. And then you sold the cattle and you bought the...
It's still there.
There you go. You have to know. It depends on the state that you're living in now. So Laban tells Yaakov like this, that we have amongst our cattle, he was speaking about the sheep, that there are different types, genetic types of sheep. There were sheep that were plain meaning they were either just white or they were just brown or just black. And then there were speckled sheep that had on them wings, little dots, big dots. We should learn, maybe God willing, next year, a whole Kabbalah on the meaning of these dots or the speckles. The speckled sheep, which is very general. So he tells Yaakov like this, you know what, let's make a deal. All the sheep that are going to be born, the ones that are not speckled are mine, and the speckled ones are yours. I don't know if we would ever accept such a deal. Like, when you work, you want to know what you're getting paid. Here, you're vulnerable to chance, even though, again, this guy Mendel figured out that genetics is not chance. There's a science today, they know exactly, genetically, they can take a test today on the parents, on the father and the mother, and they'll know the genetic makeup of the child before he's born. So Yaakov agreed to that. Now, according to the Ramban, says that when he made that deal, he never told Jacob that he's going to take away all of the speckled sheep. Because if you take all of the speckled and dotted sheep out of the pack, and you only give to Yaakov the plain, the one-colored sheep, genetically, then the children will be all born plain. And even if some genes are dormant, and they are dormant, but it tremendously, the father and the mother, according to Mendel, is 50% already of the genes. So if both parents are white or black or brown, then the chances of their children being speckled are already 50% diminished if you don't allow any of the parents to be speckled. So he made an agreement with him, and he never told him that he's going to take away all the speckled. So Laban, the conniving Laban, was always under this, he was claiming to be an honest guy. He says, I never said I won't do it. So Yaakov knew he's dealing with a conniving person. And it's very important for us to know that we deal with conniving people accordingly. You're not allowed to steal, but you have to deal with them on their level. And he outsmarted him. So this is what he did. So the grace of Laban went ahead, and the chances for Yaakov to get the percent of speckled sheep was tremendously diminished. So here, verse 37. So this is what the Torah writes. Vayikach Yaakov took Makal Livne Lach. There are different ways of reading it, but let's read it the way Rashi reads it. Livne, according to Rashi, is a certain type of wood, and it was a moist type of wood. One, he took another type of wood tree called Luz, and he turned a third type of tree called Adamoy. This is the way Rashi reads it. We'll see later. Chidon, there are other later commentators that read it a little bit different. But one thing everyone agrees with, that he took three types of wood. Now, what they all shared in common was the following, that the bark of the wood was much darker than the wood under the bark. So it's not like many trees that we know, that even if you peel the bark off, the bark is dark brown, and then the wood underneath is light brown. But these are trees that the wood is like white. Maybe not white like this cup, but very light, and the bark was reddish, actually. So there was a mixture here between red and white. And all of these three, red doesn't mean red, red can mean a brown, but it's very important. I'm saying the color red because we'll see later on that in Kabbalah we learned about this once, that white is the color of chesed, And red is the color of Gevura. And Tiferet is not pink. Tiferet is white and red speckled. Netzach and Hoyt are different shades of pink. I mean, if you take white and red together, you get, you know, light pink, dark pink. That's Netzach and Hoyt. Tiferet is white and red, but all those lollipops. Remember that? So that's Tiferet. That's for kids for sure. There's nothing more Tiferet than that. But that's mamash. These were the colors of the sheets that we're talking about. Just they weren't red, they were brownish, but it was a, you know, red brownish. So he took these woods that had in it a very dark outside and a very light inside, and by Yefatel Bahem Pitsolois Levonis, and he unpeeled parts of the bark. So when you took part of the bark off, either you took them out in circles, so you had dots, white dots, or you took them out in lines, so you have white lines. According to the Medrash, he had hundreds of sticks. But what he did was, he had physical sticks that were speckled, that were polka dotted, or that were striped in a very strong, the colors were very rich. He just revealed the white that was already there. He didn't add anything. He took off, and through taking off the dark klipa, not entirely, partially, he allowed those woods to become speckled. Then, Vayatzik es hamakwis asher pitzel barahatim, he took those sticks that he unpeeled, and he put them, barahatim b'shikasoy samayim, he put them in the troughs where the animals would go and drink. And when they would go or drink, the verse describes that they were very impressed. You know, when you see things, until today, certain things you see, you don't even know that you're seeing. And Nayim Lahem below, right? You look at the sky and we don't see the beauty. You see a building of 8 stories, wow, you think I might have, wow. So you look at the sky, you're sugar with the clouds. Certain things, for whatever reason, you saw it so many times, you don't see it. But this was an unusual sight. And it impressed. Just they looked at it, and the image of these sticks impressed the sheep right before they were mated. They were mating. So while they were mating, what was in their mind was the image of the speckled, polka dotted, striped, red and white barks, trees, pieces of wood. And according to the image that was in the mind of the animal, that physically affected the genetic makeup of the children. Now, there is a Rabbeinu Bachaya that says something beautiful. He writes that there was a miracle that happened here, and there was a natural phenomenon that happened here. All of the commentators agree that when animals are mating, when people are together, that if they're going to have a certain image deeply embedded in their mind, it's going to have a very strong effect on the genes of the child, meaning that you're going to inspire, you're going to give, you're going to change the genetic makeup. Mamash. Will you always succeed in doing that? The Rabbeinu Bachaya says, not always. It's not a science. You just up the chances. God made a miracle that all of the sheep were born speckled and polka dotted. So there was a miracle here, but it was a miracle that wasn't like the splitting of the sea. It was a miracle enclosed in nature, because this concept is a natural phenomenon. There is a medrash that speaks about a story of a king, a white king with a white queen, that had a black child. What do you think the king wanted to do to his wife? He wanted to kill her. So he had a Jewish advisor. And before he killed the queen, he told the advisor what he's planning to do. He had a black child. So the Yid asked him, do you have paintings on the ceiling in your bedroom? He said, yeah, a king, palace. He says, are there black men painted on the ceiling? said, yeah. So the king told him that that's why your child is blind.
The Jew told him. The Jew.
Huh?
The Jew told him.
The Jew told him. And then the guy who had an affair paid him. I took the money. I'm just kidding. You never know. The point is that we learn the Chumash. We have in the Gemara there was a man called Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was one of the most beautiful men that ever lived from the creation of the world. He was a big tzaddik, so don't you have to get the story in the right context. Rabbi Yochanan, at night when women used to go to the mikvah, he used to hang out by the mikvah. Not to see the woman, God forbid, but he wanted that when the woman leave the mikvah, they should look at him. The Gemara says. And that's going to physically affect the beauty of the children that they're going to conceive, if they were conceived that night. Because he was like, his beauty was unnatural. Like Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik's beauty was so great. The Medrash says that, you know, when the wife of Potiphar, we'll read in a couple of weeks, and she was going crazy about him, so her friends were telling her, no, leave Meshuggah, he's a slave, he's a Jew, he's a Hebrew. So she said, yeah. You know, this is before he was incarcerated. So she invited her friends to come over, and she gave them pears, and she gave them knives to peel, to take the peel off. Something a woman do very good. She gave me that, there's no pear left, I can tell you. But I don't know, my mother, she knows that it's just the peel goes off perfect. So she was giving her friends to peel the whatever it was, the apple or the pear, and she asked Yosef HaTzadik to walk by. And all of her friends cut her fingers off. That's how impressive Yosef HaTzadik was. So this was Rabbi Yochanan. He had a little bit of that beauty. So he stood. So the image, the physically, the image that the parents have in their mind, if like in this case, will inspire the physical genetic makeup of the child. Doesn't only stop with it. It's even the physical, which means that the emotional being. The way the parents feel, the way they feel about each other, will have a tremendous genetic, physical effect on the emotional stability of the child. That means if the parents are loving each other, then the child will come out healthy. And if, God forbid, there are going to be feelings which is not of love, then those feelings are going to be embedded in the child, etc. You can imagine that. This is a concept that science does not acknowledge at all. They don't know that. How can they know that? But it's a natural phenomenon. Knows that how the mind affects even the physical. And Yaakov Avinu, through this, and again, he had the right to do it because Laban was trying to outwit him for other explanations why he was halachically allowed to do it. But the bottom line is that Yaakov Avinu, he all he needed to do was he needed to have the sheep have in their mind an image when they were making. And then the prophet says that he only needed to do that in the beginning. Once the first batch were born, now she says that they were early, they made it twice a year. They give birth twice a year. So the earlier, the ones that made during Nissan, he needed to use the sticks. But for the baby boomers, for the ones that get married, the ones that do that later, for them all he needed to do is when the sheep used to work, the prophet writes, he used to put the speckled sheep on the front. Sheep followed the leader. So the leader was always a speckled one. So they were always looking, the whole day they're looking at the polka dotted sheep. And that's it. And that, again, naturally, it should have only upped, really upped, the amount of children that are born speckled. A miracle, a mess happened, Rabbeinu Bachai says, they were all born speckled. Bottom line was that he was there for a couple of years and all of the wealth of Laban went to Yaakov. And he went ahead and he got everything. This is what it says in the Chumash. Now, look, listen to this. I want to quote two different statements that we have in Chassidus. And it's amazing how one is connected to the other and it's connected to the literal meaning. Everything is connected. First of all, the Chidon. He was a big Makubal. He writes like this, that if you look at the letters of the sticks that he used, so the Chidon learns that the sticks were Lach, Luz, and Arvan. But if you look inside the Chumash reading again on chapter 30 and verse 37, he says Lot begins with the letter Lamed, which is 30. The Pasuk says Ve'luz Vav, so that's 6, 36. And Ve'Adamai, another 6. You just take the first letter of these 6, so it's 30, 6 and 6, that's number 42. And we know in Kabbalah that the number 42, Shem Mav, is the letter of elevation. Which is why every time we are trying to elevate ourselves in the prayer, we say the prayer of Ana B'Koach, which is the ultimate godly, divine combination of 42 letters. God's name that has in it 42 letters that are the abbreviation of the Ana B'Koach prayer. But it's the name that allows us to elevate ourselves. According to Kabbalah, Ana B'Koach is just like saying Kaddish. Where Kaddish is also, it elevates the soul. Ana B'Koach elevates. I'll explain to you what that means in a moment. So there's the concept of he used that to elevate. What was he elevating? He was taking something that belonged to Allah, something that was in the domain of unholiness. He didn't suppress it. He conquered it. It became his. It became legally his. He elevated it. How did he elevate it? How do you elevate something? So the Zohar says like this. This is what I want to explain. The Zohar says that the reason why he took 3 sticks, I mean, if the concept was to impress them with speckled, with striped, they should just have a very strong image in their mind, that if when people make what they have in mind, that has a tremendous, even physical impact on the genes of the children, then why do they have to have 3 different types of woods? So the Kitzur, he explained that one of them represented Chesed, one of them represented Gevurah, and the third represented Tifet. And Yaakov Avinu, who was trying to elevate unholiness, was only able to do so with the power of Tifetus. And let's explain what that means. And to get to Tifetus, you cannot begin with Tifetus. You have to begin with Chesed, then you go to Gevurah, and then you go to Tifetus. So let's give an example, a practical example of what that means. We're walking down the street, right? And a guy bangs on the window and he sticks out his hand and he's asking you for a couple of, for help. What do you do?
Give him money.
What do you give
him? Okay, food or money.
How much money would you give? Nothing personal, honey. Give him.
Whatever you can afford.
Whatever you can afford?
Yeah. Oh. A coin.
Give him a coin. Huh? So, when a person is a person of chesed, a person who is a kind person, who is a giver, would give everyone. Would you want to give everyone? If you want to give everyone, if you're practical, then, many shuls, people davening is an expensive activity because Baruch Hashem, people come in the shuls to collect money. And some shuls have the merit of receiving 10, 20 during davening a day. And also, you give them a quarter. If you can afford them, you give them a dollar. But people, the more you give, it's inevitable. The less you're going to give to each one, correct? If you're a giving person, everything is limited, so you give everyone a dollar. That's a chesed. You do kindness with everyone. What does Gevurah mean? What would a person who has in him or in her the attribute of Gevurah do? Gevurah, see, we spoke about this last week. Gevurah is not bad. Gevurah means to judge. What does judging mean? When a guy asks you for money, you want to find out who this person is. Are they lazy good-for-nothings that are trying, to get a handout? Or are they people that really need help? And like we explained last week, Gevurah is a lot greater than chesed. You should know something. I mean, you have these people that ask you a million questions. What do you do? Why don't you do this? And then at the end they give it a quarter. These are evil people. I'm not talking about those guys. But normally, once a person begins to judge you, and they begin getting involved, and begin asking you questions on a fundraiser, that's a good thing. Why is it? Because they're judging you. Now, one of the two is going to happen. Either they're going to find you unworthy, which could happen, and then you won't even get the quarter. But if they're going to find you worthy, then their goal is going to be to really help you. They're not going to give you a quarter. The more, when you go you ask someone, you know, your fundraiser, you want to be judged. The worst thing is, oh, you're not, it's okay, then here's, you know, here's $18. No, you want the guy because asking, what's your budget and what do you spend and why do you spend and how do you spend and why do you do this and why did you cut out that expense? Normally, the more they're judging you, that's great, because they are engaging you with kavura. Kavura is good. Kavura means they're judging you. The goodness about kavura is that kavura elevates. And a guy that's dealing with you, or a woman that is dealing with kavura, she's going to elevate. That means that if she's going to find you worthy, she's going to lift you up. It's more of a feminine characteristic. Chesed, give. You cannot give to everyone everything. It doesn't work that way. So it's more about you want to be the giver. You don't even care about if you're going to help someone out. So the quarter is not going to, the quarter will help them a little bit. Good. Minimizing the beauty of giving to everyone a little bit. But that's a chesed approach. So Avraham Avinu had an open house. Everyone who wanted a meal came and ate it. That was chesed. Yitzchak Avinu didn't have such a house. If you're looking for a free meal, he kicked you out. But if you needed help, he didn't only give you food, he gave you even more than Avraham Avinu, he gave you a job. That's what Yitzchak did. It's good to know that. Oh, don't have this picture that Gevurah is something negative. Gevurah could be negative if the judgment is not in your favor. But Gevurah is a guy looking for the truth. You're looking for to do what's just. And what just, sometimes giving a dollar is not just. It's more you're giving it for you not to feel bad. Now what's Yaakov? If this is Chesed and that's Gevurah, so what's Jacob? What does mercy mean? So if Chesed needs to help everyone, then just practically you're going to help everyone a little bit, which is great. Gevurah is going to be, you're going to be separated. You're separating the worthy from the unworthy. But the worthy are going to get a lot more help. And the unworthy will get zero. What's the next step up? That after the judgment, you're going to give to even the unworthy. The worthy, you're giving with gevurah, but the unworthy is not getting anything. Comes along someone who has the attribute of compassion. Compassion means that even though I found you unworthy, I'm still going to help you. Why? What's the logic?
Because it's difficult to ask.
Kind of not for everyone. It's difficult the first time. You get used to everything. Difficult to stop asking. I was sitting last night, I'm confused with time, two nights ago in 770 with my old classmates, Fabrini. It's very funny. So, It was a very nice guy. It was 4 a.m. and one guy gets up and he said, "But there's no what's the ubachem? What's the, we got to work out with something meaningful. What's the point of this?" And he was clutching. This guy was one of my classmates that he's having a hard time financially. So when he says, "What's the ubachem?" So another guy says, "You're giving to my Chabad was $5." That was very funny. He fundraised from him. Guy, and he said that it's a good referring, and we walked out. You gave $5, you gave to the Indian $5. How do you give someone who's unworthy? How does that work? So, again, if you're a chesed type of person, you don't see anyone unworthy. A person who's wearing the glasses of chesed, everyone is worthy, and people who look at that world that way. So, when we're young and a little bit immature, we find that very attractive. That's great, you know, it's positive. That person sees good in everyone. Good, very nice. Minimizing, it's a great attribute. Huh? Disconnected? All right, let's connect that. Thank you. But people who see positivity in everyone and therefore help everyone, they don't really help anyone. They help themselves. They elevate themselves. They're givers. But you can't give to everyone everything. The Gevurah is different. Gevurah is, listen, I cannot help. Let me pick and choose. Let me find who's worthy. And who's worthy, I'm going to pick them up. Now, if you find someone unworthy, how can you help them?
Mercy.
But how does that work psychologically? How can you help someone who's unworthy? We're not talking about giving them a quarter, we're talking about really helping them.
You put yourself in there.
Don't live. So the secret is like this. Chesed is on the right, Gevura is on the left, and Tiferes is in the middle, in Kabbalah. In Chabad Chassidus, there's a tremendous theme. It's a pity if you don't have enough time to elaborate too much on this. And this is the theme. Think about this. This is an amazing concept. The theme is that physically, there should never be a middle. Everything should either be to the right or to the left. Take any physical area, right? Cut it in half. You have the right and the left. There is no middle. The middle is a millimeter, cut that in half, right and left. You get down to what's called today nanophysics, or wherever they're up to, good, divide that to the right and to the left. Is there a center in the physical universe? Physically. Everything can be, everything that is, if it is, it could be divided. Only nothingness cannot be divided. If it's a metzias, if it exists, then it can be divided. If it can be divided, then divided. So divided one to the right and one to the left.
If it's something tangible.
Tangible. In the tangible universe, there doesn't exist the concept of a middle. It's an idea. It's a concept. It's not a physical thing. Think about this. I'll give you another more example. Chassidus speaks about a corner. What's a corner? Is a corner a place of its own?
No. It's a connection of
it's a concept. It's the concept of the connection of the two. Good. But it's not a physical place because either, right, either it's here or it's here. There is no place.
It doesn't exist by itself.
Thank you. There is no, if you use the word in Chassidus, in Metzias, in existence, there is no sense. Center is an idea. So you have the right and you have the left and then you have the center. Center is an idea. That means that you are going to, in your mind, understand that the right is there and the left is there and I'm in the middle, and the middle is what on one hand is not tangible, and the middle has the power to transform the entire physical universe. It's an idea. What does that mean? The Torah speaks about Yishmael. Remember him? A kid, his mother is in the desert, and they ran out of water, and he's dying of thirst. And the mother cannot tolerate. The mother left him to die. She doesn't even have the emotional ability to hear him cry. She goes away. And we learn that, right, Rashi brings the message that of the heavens there was a whole debate going on. And basically the angels were telling God, let Yishmael die. In the past, he did terrible things. The future of Yishmael, and they quoted to God, they saw the future that when the Jewish people were exiled the first time from Israel by the destruction of the first temple. So when we were leaving Israel, those who survived the destruction of the temple, we were famished, we were hungry. So the Yishmaelim, right, our cousins, they went ahead and they gave us salty fish. And they showed us large noigos, they were large, it was empty, but it looked like barrels. In those days, they used to store water in these skin bags. So they had these large holders which were used for water. So we were eating the fish and we opened up and we died from thirst. It's a very painful death. Well, that's what Ishmaelim did to us. So the angels told God, look at the past and look at the future. He wicked, he is wicked, he's going to be wicked, how can you save him? So God said, I want to tell me, how is he now? Now, right now, is he wicked or not wicked? Just like we said that in the space of the physical universe, there is no center. It's either to the right or to the left. Same thing is with time. The concept of the present is an idea. Because really, either it's in the past or it's in the future. Mercy, you have mercy on someone when you don't look at their past and you don't look at their future. That's the only way it's possible to take the one who was deemed unworthy through Gemara, unworthy, and you're still going to help him. Why are you going to help him or her? Because you're going to look at the center. You're going to look at the now they're good. God told Ba'asher, who shoved, now Yishmael is, yeah, he was dying from thirst. He was not killing anyone. He was not murdering, whatever, all the capital, cardinal sins that he was engaged with. He was doing none of the above then. He did and he would do, but now he's good. So when you, the power to take an idea, that the center represents an idea, something which is not physical. In the physical universe, there is no center. In time, there is no present. Either it's the past or it's the future. The present is really a fleeting moment. Either it was or it's going to be. But it's an idea. There's a concept of the present. Center. The center, the concept of the center is so powerful that even someone who was unworthy can become worthy because now he's worthy. You get this concept?
So that's Yaakov.
So that's Yaakov. And that's what the Zohar says. He needed to take three sticks because he needed to get to the concept of three, because one is right and two is the left and the third is the center, and the center is rooted in the highest level, and because it comes from the highest level, which means it's not a physical phenomenon, center, it's an idea, it's a spiritual phenomenon, that's why it can come down and impact the physical, which is what we were saying, that what you have in your mind, the idea, the image that you have in your mind, physically, not miraculously, changes, inspires the genetic makeup of the next generation.
So in order to manifest that, you're saying use something tangible. In this case, he's using something tangible in order to create it into physical.
You don't need something tangible. Yeah, you inspire sheep with something tangible. But people can be inspired. Yeah.
But you use physical for physical.
Well, 100%. But I'm going to impact the genetic makeup of my children by the idea that I have in my mind. Not just the physical that affects the physical, actually it's something which is greater than the physical will impact the physical as much or even more.
So that impact, if it's using something physical in one sense or using the mind, are those equally difficult to achieve?
No, the mind is the key. In order to engage the mind, by sheep you need something physical.
Because it's an animal.
Because it's an animal. And by many people also, you engage the mind with visual stimulation. But the goal, the impact, the real elevation, that means you want to transform the plane into the speckle. You want to change, you want to transform. And this is where the concept is.
My point was, it's like a human's going to stand in front of him and start thinking dots and things.
No, the animals have to think that. The animals have to think that. The ones who are mating have to think. But the thought, this is Torah, that what I have in my mind is going to physically affect the child. And, of course, emotionally affect him, and even, of course, mentally and spiritually, etc. Even physically. It's an amazing idea. It's not an idea, it's a reality. It's something which is real. It's a physical, natural phenomenon. And that's why the Torah spends so much time talking about this. In other words, we need to understand like this, that in order, this is the secret, in order for me to transform evil, I need to have the ability of separating the past, separating the future. When you live in the moment, if you only look at the center, then even the unworthy now is worthy. And if he's worthy, then the greatest blessings come to him. And God made a miracle and saved Yishmael.
So we're saying nothing is beyond redemption.
And the key of redemption is the power of whatever it is that Tiferet represents. This concept of the center. And the center is not a physical power. It's the most spiritual of powers, because in the physical universe there is no center. That the dominance of spiritual over the material is what will transform. So Yaakov goes ahead. He's not suppressing He's not making a deal with Avival. If you stay there, I'm no. He's engaging. He's assessing. He's not living in the la la la. He assesses the reality. He understands love. But after he understands love and he finds him guilty, he finds him unworthy. That means you have to go from chesed, then you have to have kavura, and then you have to find the unholy, unworthy. Then you have to have the ability of seeing something in their center. There's something in them that's good. That was Jacob's power. Even after finding something unholy, knowing who he's dealing with, finding the good in it and taking it and elevating it. And physically, that's what happened. He physically went to Haran. He elevated all of the good that was in there by this separation process, and he brought it back into Israel.
So in some sense, we have to be able to stop time.
Yes.
To be able to bring down the concept.
That means you have to first assess the reality, and then you have to remove yourself higher than reality. And moving yourself higher than reality will also mean you're going to have to go above time, which is the concept of the present. You have to be above time. You have to be above space. It means you have to connect yourself. That's the thing of Tiferet. Tiferet is the reason why it goes so low and it can elevate something so low is because it's rooted in something so high. But you have to have, last week, you have to have Chesed and Gevurah. You know, the Rebbe, just to finish every Kabrangan, he used to always start acknowledging what is. Every Friday, he used to start by making a real assessment of what is. You know, today is this day, and he's just acknowledged, and Yidden are getting together. That alone is already good. He first, you know, GP, every, he assessed, he was in touch with what is. The good and the bad, very important, and you have to see the bad. And then you have to find the redeeming factor in the bad. And even after it's found unworthy, there's a power to elevate it. We're going to stop over here. Hold that in mind.
But he had to have the goodness, even because having.